Chapter 18. Upon a purpose, than that which picked out this officer for the part. Nothing in all creation could have suited him better. Even while he spoke, he became a greasy, sleepy, shy, good-natured, chuckle-headed, unsuspicious, and confiding young butcher. His very hair seemed to have suet in it, as he made it smooth upon his head, and his fresh complexion, to be lubricated by large quantities of animal food. Apostrophe so I ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe apostrophe always with the confiding snigger of the foolish young butcher, so I dressed myself in the regular way, made up a little bundle of clothes, and went to the public house, and asked if I could have a lodging there. They says, yes, you can have a lodging here, and I got a bedroom, and settled myself down in the tap. There was a number of people about the place, and coming backwards and forwards to the house. And first one says, and then another says, are you from the country, young man? Yes, I says, I am. I'm come out of Northamptonshire, and I'm quite lonely here, for I don't know London at all, and it's such a mighty big town. It is a big town, they says. Oh, it's a very big town, I says. Really and truly I never was in such a town. It quite confuses of me. And all that, you know. When some of the journeyman butchers, that used the house, found that I wanted a place, they says, oh, we'll get you a place. And they actually took me to a site of places, in Newgate Market, Newport Market, Clare, Carnaby, I don't know where all. But the wages was ha, 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 was not sufficient, and I never could suit myself, don't you see? Some of the queer frequenters of the house were a little suspicious of me at first, and I was obliged to be very cautious indeed how I communicated with Strar Fendel. Sometimes, when I went out, pretending to stop and look into the shop windows and just casting my eye round, I used to see some of them following me. But, being perhaps better accustomed than they thought for, to that sort of thing, I used to lead them on as far as I thought necessary, or convenient, sometimes a long way, and then turn sharp round, and meet them, and say, oh, dear, how glad I am to come upon you so fortunate. This London's such a place, I'm blowed if I ain't lost again. And then we'd go back all together, to the public house, and ha, 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 and smoke our pipes, don't you see? They were very attentive to me, I am sure. It was a common thing, while I was living there, for some of them to take me out, and show me London. They showed me the prison, showed me Newgate, and when they showed me Newgate, I stops at the place, where the porters pitch their loads, and says, oh dear, is this where they hang the men? Oh lord, that. They says, what a simple cove he is. That ain't it. And then, they pointed out which was it, and I says lore. And they says, now you'll know it again, won't you? And I said I thought I should, if I tried hard, and I assure you I kept a sharp lookout for the city police, when we were out in this way, for if any of them had happened to know me, and had spoke to me, it would have been all up in a minute. However, by good luck such a thing never happened, and all went on quiet. Though the difficulties I had in communicating with my brother officers were quite extraordinary. The stolen goods, that were brought to the public house by the warehouse porters, were always disposed of in a back parlor. For a long time, I never could get into this parlor, or see what was done there. As I sat smoking my pipe, like an innocent young chap, by the tap-room fire, I'd hear some of the parties to the robbery, as they came in and out, say softly to the landlord, who's that? What does he do here? Bless your soul, says the landlord, he's only a ha, ha, ha. He's only a green young fellow from the country, as is looking for a butcher's situation. Don't mind him. So, in course of time, they were so convinced of my being green, and got to be so accustomed to me, that I was as free of the parlor as any of them, and I have seen as much as £70 worth of fine lawn sold there, in one night, that was stolen from a warehouse in Friday Street. After the sale, the buyers always stood treat at supper, or dinner, or whatnot, and they'd say on those occasions, "Come on, butcher, put your best leg foremost, young'un, and walk into it," which I used to do and hear, a table, all manner of particulars, that it was very important for us detectives to know. This went on for 10 weeks. I lived in the public house all the time, and never was out of the butcher's dress except in bed. At last, when I had followed 7 of the thieves, and set 'em to rights, that's an expression of ours, don't you see, by which I mean to say, that I traced 'em, and found out where the robberies were done, and all about 'em, Straw, and Fendel, and I, gave one another the office, and at a time agreed upon, a descent was made upon the public house, and the apprehensions effected. One of the first things the officers did, was to collar me for the parties to the robbery, weren't to suppose yet, that I was anything but a butcher, on which the landlord cries out, "Don't take him," he says, "whatever you do. He's only a poor young chap from the country, and butter wouldn't melt in his mouth." However, they ha, ha, ha. They took me, and pretended to search my bedroom, where nothing was found, but an old fiddle belonging to the landlord, that had got there somehow or another. But, it entirely changed the landlord's opinion, for when it was produced, he says, "My fiddle, the butcher's a purloiner. I give him into custody for the robbery of a musical instrument." The man that had stolen the goods in Friday Street was not taken yet. He had told me, in confidence, that he had his suspicions there was something wrong on account of the city police having captured one of the party, and that he was going to make himself scarce. I asked him, "Where do you mean to go, Mr. Shepherdson?" "Why, butcher," says he, "the Setting Moon, in the Commercial Road, is a snug house, and I shall bang out there for a time. I shall call myself Simpson, which appears to me to be a modest sort of a name. Perhaps you will give us a look in, butcher?" "Well," says I think I will give you a call," which I fully intended, don't you see, because, of course, he was to be taken. I went over to the Setting Moon next day, with a brother officer, and asked at the bar for Simpson. They pointed out his room, upstairs. As we were going up, he looks down over the banister, and calls out, "Hello, butcher, is that you?" "Yes, it's me. How do you find yourself?" "Bobbish," he says, "but who's that with you?" "It's only a young man, that's a friend of mine," I says. "Come along, then," says he, "any friend of the butcher's is as welcome as the butcher." So, I made my friend acquainted with him, and we took him into custody. You have no idea, sir, what a sight it was, in court, when they first knew that I wasn't a butcher after all. I wasn't produced at the first examination, when there was a remand, but I was at the second. And when I stepped into the box, in full police uniform, and the whole party saw how they had been done, actually a groan of horror and dismay proceeded from 'em in the dock. At the Old Bailey, when their trials came on, Mr. Clarkson was engaged for the defense, and he couldn't make out how it was about the butcher. He thought, all along, it was a real butcher. When the counsel for the prosecution said, "I will now call before you, gentlemen, the police officer, meaning myself," Mr. Clarkson says, "Why police officer? Why more police officers? I don't want police. We have had a great deal too much of the police. I want the butcher." However, sir, he had the butcher and the police officer, both in one. Out of 7 prisoners committed for trial, 5 were found guilty, and some of 'em were transported. The respectable firm at the West End got a term of imprisonment. And that's the butcher's story. ... The story done, the chuckle-headed butcher again resolved himself into the smooth-faced detective. But, he was so extremely tickled by their having taken him about, when he was that dragon in disguise, to show him London, that he could not help reverting to that point in his narrative, and gently repeating with the butcher snigger, "Oh, dear," I says, "is that where they hang the men?" "Oh, lor, that," says they. What a simple cove he is. Apostrophe, it being now late, and the party very modest in their fear of being too diffuse, there were some tokens of separation, when Sergeant Thornton, the soldierly-looking man, said, looking round him with a smile, "Before we break up, sir, perhaps you might have some amusement in hearing of the adventures of a carpetbag. They are very short, and, I think, curious." Apostrophe, we welcomed the carpetbag, as cordially as Mr. Shepherdson welcomed the false butcher at the setting moon. Sergeant Thornton proceeded. In 1847 I was dispatched to Chatham, in search of one Meshick, a Jew. He had been carrying on, pretty heavily, in the bill-stealing way, getting acceptances from young men of good connections in the army chiefly, on pretense of discount, and bolting with the same. Meshick was off, before I got to Chatham. All I could learn about him was, that he had gone, probably to London, and had with him a carpetbag. I came back to town, by the last train from Blackwall, and made inquiries concerning a Jew passenger with a carpetbag. The office was shut up, it being the last train. There were only two or three porters left. Looking after a Jew with a carpetbag, on the Blackwall Railway, which was then the high road to a great military depot, was worse than looking after a needle in a hayrick. But it happened that one of these porters had carried, for a certain Jew, to a certain public house, a certain carpetbag. I went to the public house, but the Jew had only left his luggage there for a few hours, and had called for it in a cab, and taken it away. I put such questions there, and to the porter, as I thought prudent, and got at this description of the carpetbag. It was a bag which had, on one side of it, worked in worsted, a green parrot on a stand. A green parrot on a stand was the means by which to identify that carpetbag. I traced Meshick, by means of this green parrot on a stand, to Cheltenham, to Birmingham, to Liverpool, to the Atlantic Ocean. At Liverpool he was too many for me. He had gone to the United States, and I gave up all thoughts of Meshick, and likewise of his carpetbag. Many months afterwards, near a year afterwards, there was a bank in Ireland robbed of £7,000, by a person of the name of Dr. Dundee, who escaped to America, from which country some of the stolen notes came home. He was supposed to have bought a farm in New Jersey. Under proper management, that estate could be seized and sold, for the benefit of the parties he had defrauded. I was sent off to America for this purpose. I landed at Boston. I went on to New York. I found that he had lately changed New York paper money for New Jersey paper money, and had banked cash in New Brunswick. To take this Dr. Dundee, it was necessary to entrap him into the state of New York, which required a deal of artifice and trouble. At one time, he couldn't be drawn into an appointment. At another time, he appointed to come to meet me, and a New York officer, on a pretext I made, and then his children at the measles. At last he came, per steamboat, and I took him, and lodged him in a New York prison called the Tombs, which I dare say you know, sir. ... Editorial acknowledgement to that effect. I went to the Tombs, on the morning after his capture, to attend the examination before the magistrate. I was passing through the magistrate's private room, when, happening to look round me to take notice of the place, as we generally have a habit of doing, I clapped my eyes, in one corner, on a carpetbag. What did I see upon that carpetbag, if you will believe me, but a green parrot on a stand, as large as life? That carpetbag, with the representation of a green parrot on the stand, said I, belongs to an English Jew, named Aaron Meshick, and to no other man, alive or dead. I give you my word the New York police officers were doubled up with surprise. How did you ever come to know that? Said they. I think I ought to know that green parrot by this time, said I, for I have had as pretty a dance after that bird, at home, as ever I had, in all my life. ... And was it Meshick's? Apostrophe, apostrophe, we submissively inquired. Was it, sir? Of course it was. He was in custody for another offense, in that very identical tombs, at that very identical time. And, more than that, some memoranda, relating to the fraud for which I had vainly endeavored to take him, were found to be, at that moment, lying in that very same individual carpet bag. Apostrophe, apostrophe, such are the curious coincidences, and such is the peculiar ability, always sharpening and being improved by practice, and always adapting itself to every variety of circumstances, and opposing itself to every new device, that perverted ingenuity can invent, for which this important social branch of the public service is remarkable. Forever on the watch, with their wits stretched to the utmost, these officers have, from day to day and year to year, to set themselves against every novelty of trickery and dexterity that the combined imaginations of all the lawless rascals in England can devise, and to keep pace with every such invention that comes out. In the courts of justice, the materials of thousands of such stories as we have narrated often elevated into the marvelous and romantic, by the circumstances of the case, are dryly compressed into the set phrase, in consequence of information I received, I did so and so. Apostrophe suspicion was to be directed, by careful inference and deduction, upon the right person. The right person was to be taken, wherever he had gone, or whatever he was doing to avoid detection. He is taken, there he is at the bar, that is enough. From information I, the officer, received, I did it, and, according to the custom in these cases, I say no more. These games of chess, played with live pieces, are played before small audiences, and are chronicled nowhere. The interest of the game supports the player. Its results are enough for justice. To compare great things with small, suppose Leverrier or Adams informing the public that from information he had received he had discovered a new planet, or Columbus informing the public of his day that from information he had received he had discovered a new continent. So the detectives inform it, that they have discovered a new fraud or an old offender, and the process is unknown. Thus, at midnight, closed the proceedings of our curious and interesting party. But one other circumstance finally wound up the evening, after our detective guests had left us. One of the sharpest among them, and the officer best acquainted with the swell mob, had his pocket picked, going home. Three detective anecdotes. I the pair of gloves, it's a singular story, sir, apostrophe said Inspector Weald, of the detective police, who, in company with Sergeants Thornton and Smith, paid us another twilight visit, one July evening, and I've been thinking you might like to know it. It's concerning the murder of the young woman, Eliza Grimwood, some years ago, over in the Waterloo Road. She was commonly called the Countess, because of her handsome appearance and her proud way. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.